The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Where is yours today? I don't have anything on my mind tonight. Let's see what's here. And I think pretty much everybody has spoken, except for Katie, but we'll let you kind of observe tonight. So it's open. Let's record a little bit. Actually, reading and writing are both really good explorations in terms of exploring content and how it impacts us. Because we can slow it down a little bit. And so in terms of seeing how does content impact us, I think in this room you've had a chance to see in listening how does it impact you. We did that mindfulness out loud. You saw how that impacted you, maybe in just listening to the other reports. You've seen how it impacts you. Several of you have said just hearing what the tasks you're all doing has an impact on you during the day. So there's that kind of exploration of content and how does it impact you. And then there's a kind of an exploration of impact in the moment. How does it impact you here and now, right now, as you're hearing, as you're listening. And reading is a good way to explore that. And it sounds like you were in it a little bit and then managed to be back a little bit. And were you aware, it sounds like you were aware a little bit of some of the motivations. Were you also aware of how the content was landing of the book? Yeah.
I was interested in why.
Use the mic.
I became interested in why I was reading these types of books.
Okay.
And I saw some gentleness to some of them that was soothing. There's a soothing nature, like a self-soothing thing.
So the reading gives us an opportunity to kind of slow things down and see how does it impact us. And you might check in, like if you're reading news, hearing news on the radio, how does that land? There's a variety of kinds of news, and boy, it sure has different impact on you as you hear it. So that's a good exploration around reading. And writing, too. Actually, writing is good preparation for mindful speaking, because you're communicating. It's a little slower than speaking. And so you have a chance to recognize, okay, you're forming these thoughts, you're putting them down, you're expressing yourself. So it's a more generative mind. It's more active in the reading and the listening. It's more receptive. In the writing, it's more active. In speaking, it's more active. And so you have an opportunity there to also explore when you're writing, how does it impact you? So both of those are good practices to take on. Maybe I'll try that some other daily life practice retreat. Have everybody work with reading and writing. See what happens. Yeah. So the question about expanding awareness and taking in more experience, the question, part of the question is, do things happen just like there's a little bit of seeing and then a little bit of movement and then a little bit of hearing and it's a serial kind of thing, or is it all happening at the same time? So Buddhist psychology has the perspective that things, at least with respect to attention, every mind moment, that there are many, many mind moments, and every mind moment there is some kind of attention, there's some kind of intention, there's some kind of perception, there's some kind of feeling, and that essentially in a mind moment, that there's only one thing happening there. So there's a contact with some experience. Those mind moments are infinitesimally small. I don't know how they get this number, but they say something like 17 trillion mind moments in the blink of an eye. So like, right, you know, so So from our experience level, it feels like, sometimes feels like, it can feel like things are happening simultaneously, that we're knowing things simultaneously. And when I think about how the brain works, I think, well, you know, the brain is a parallel processor. I mean, can't it see and hear simultaneously? But then the question of the factor of attention, I'm not as sure about. I mean, the factor of attention, maybe one thing at a time in a serial fashion. But again, it can switch. It can like multitask. It can flip. But it's happening so quickly, it's possibly happening so quickly, that in our experience, it feels essentially like simultaneous. There are times in practice where it becomes, where the factor of attention becomes clearer, and it kind of seems like we're seeing closer to the mind moment level, although I don't think many people get the kind of concentration to actually be able to count 17 trillion mind moments in the blink of an eye. Although there are some people out there who have the kind of concentration that can describe phenomenon at that level. I'm not one of them. It is kind of mind-blowing. But I think what's more important is recognizing a couple of aspects about the factor of attention, and that is, attention can be kind of narrow and it can be broad. I did that the other day with the guided expanding awareness meditation. Were you here for that?
No, but I listened to it. I did it.
You did it at home, okay. And a little bit later, I used the example, you know, put your attention in your thumb right now. And you can feel your thumb, and then maybe expand out to your hand. And there's a sense of being able to take in the whole of the hand, you know, the sensation of the whole hand at once. It's possible for us to cultivate an ability to broaden that lens of attention, to take in broader experience. So there's that aspect of attention, that it can be narrow, precise, or broad. And then there's also the aspect of attention that kind of goes with something and stays with it, or kind of switches between experience, or flows between experience, kind of more in a smooth way. I find it more interesting to look at how am I aware of how the attention is functioning right now. How does it feel for me now? Does it feel like a broad, expansive awareness? That's a really helpful, as you notice, the broad awareness quieted your mind down. So for you, that was helpful. The broader the awareness, I think sometimes what's happening in the broadening of awareness is more that we're kind of resting in a place of knowing rather than, so it's the awareness, the attention is on the knowing rather than on the specifics of what is known. So that's another aspect about attention. It can be aware either of the things that are happening out here, you know, sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, or it can be aware kind of a field of knowing that's happening, kind of the receiving field of experience. And in my experience, when the awareness gets broader, it feels more, at times it feels more like it's taking in the knowing. Although I've had experiences of, like I do, my concentration practice is a full body breathing concentration practice. So I connect with, first I start by connecting with the experience of the breath here at the sternum, and then I keep my attention broad so that I'm connected to the experience of breathing, but keep my attention broad, and I begin, the experience of breathing begins to permeate the entire body. And I feel a vibratory field throughout the entire body. It's like looking at the vibratory field of the hand, only expanded through the whole body. So, you know, that's like one object. It's not so much that I'm aware of the knowing there. I'm aware of the experience of the vibratory experiential field. It's the object I'm aware of there rather than the knowing of it. So there are some broad objects that can be known. But often it is kind of more in the field of the knowing, of awareness. That kind of exploration of awareness, and I'm kind of talking really broadly around a number of different aspects of awareness, attention here. There's a lot to explore in this terrain. So this is just kind of the 35,000 foot view. What was the other piece I was going to add? It's the exploration of being aware of knowing, being aware of awareness versus being aware of experience. So, you know, there's the contact. In every experience, there's both the experience. So here, like, there's the contact, there's a sensation, there's pressure, there's coolness, there's hardness that I'm feeling on the hand. And then it's not easy at this moment because I'm pretty tired. It seems to be easier for me to do with the breathing at this moment. I can be aware of the breathing, the sensations of the breathing, and I can also be aware that I'm aware that I'm breathing. I can know that I'm breathing. For breathing, that seems pretty simple for me at this moment. It was not so easy here to recognize the knowing of the pressure, knowing of the coolness. But every single experience has both the kind of sensory experience, whether it's sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, or something happening in the mind, and the mind knowing that. So they compared the knowing and the experience. Sense experience. They're paired, the knowing and the sense experience. And often in our early exploration of mindfulness, we're aware of the sense experience. We're aware of cold, we're aware of pressure, we're aware of tightness, we're aware of seeing, we're aware of color, we're aware of sound. And that's our initial exploration, is being aware of the actual things of the world. The experiences of, or things in our mind, of emotions or thoughts. All of these are objects. And then over time, we may begin to recognize, through perhaps this more expanded kind of awareness, what am I actually aware of right now? You know, maybe it's the knowing. Maybe I'm not sure what I'm aware of right now. Over time, we may begin to get a sense of the possibility of being aware of awareness. In the Buddha's instructions in breathing, when breathing in, know that you're breathing in. That's the very first thing. You know, it's like, be aware. Know that you're breathing in. So that's the kind of instruction. So there's the breathing, and then there's the knowing, to begin to recognize those two. In my experience, it's not so helpful to try to find the knowing. And I was doing this at one monastery. I was beginning to really explore the mind in Burma at one long retreat. And I saw at some points I could see that the mind was in the place of knowing. And in that place of just being in the knowing, it was really peaceful. It's like, it's great to be in that place. There's very little reactivity when you're just receiving, receiving, knowing experience, knowing, knowing experience. Very peaceful, very spacious experience there for that, at least at that point when I was doing that. And so I started trying to do it. Initially, I was just recognizing, oh, the mind is in the knowing now. And then it felt so good. I was like, oh, let's do that. I ended up with like a headache, you know. It was not something that was easy to do. And when I reported it to my teacher, he was kind of funny. He was like, well, don't try to do it. He said, just notice when your mind does it. You know, so just kind of recognize when the mind moved into that space. So, you know, this expansive awareness, there are things we can do to cultivate that, to support it. But I'm not sure it's so helpful to try to do it as much as it is to begin to recognize the possibility, recognize it as it happens, and then notice when it collapses down, you know. So it's a different way of perceiving things. It's not necessarily the only way or the best way to have that spacious, quiet mind. That spacious, quiet mind can come with very specific attention as well. So this is a little bit of a caution around coming up with an idea that there's some experience, some right way to be mindful, some best way to be attentive that I have to find, I have to do. Over and over again, I've really gained the appreciation for what's this mind doing right now? Can I be in balance with that? As opposed to, oh, this mind right now isn't balanced. How can I get to that state of mind so that it will feel better or that it will feel balanced? It's kind of more. There was something that Gil said at the retreat last week that I really liked. He talked about the practice being like a journey. And often when we think of a journey, we think of going from A to B. You know, we're traveling on a path and trying to get somewhere. And he says, but in our practice, the journey isn't from A to B, it's from A to A. We just deepen into the experience. So the exploration is, so here I am in this experience, in this moment. It's not how can I get someplace else? How can I be how can I be fully here? And that there's a lot of things that kind of maybe get in our way of being fully here, and that's our learning. That's our practice. That's the things that are in the way of our being fully here are the very things we need to learn to let go of. There are teachers, there are lessons. So, the allowing is so the question was, what about the allowing in that place? So, the allowing is one of the ways to let go. You know, it's very much an allowing. It varies. I mean, depending on where you are in the practice, it can vary. It can just simply be an allowing that allows you to deepen into here and now. Other times, we need we may not be able to allow. We may not be able to simply allow it. We may have to actually try to bring in some wisdom or, you know, help ourselves to be able to allow it, essentially. Yeah. Yeah. So. Perfect. So another piece that It is a lot. I mean, there's a lot of teachings. There's a lot of information. What I just said, you know, that was a lot. Like I said, the 35,000 foot view on awareness and attention. And yeah, there's a lot there. And sometimes it can feel, just as you said, feel a little bit overwhelming. It's like, how am I going to be able to learn all of this? And yet, as you said, you know, when you saw that, it's just like, oh, well, craving, okay. And something that I've really gained an appreciation for is that the teachings are really dense. They're really rich. Like, you know, the littlest drop of the Buddhist teachings is so, it's enough. You actually don't need to understand all of it. Work with what does resonate. You know, when I first started the practice, I read a book. Somebody sent me a book. And I understood very little of the book. But what I did get from that book was something along the lines of, instead of indulging in your emotions, instead of reacting out of your emotions, instead of acting out of your emotions, try simply observing your emotions. The rest of it didn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, I pulled that out of the book. And that one piece didn't make a lot of sense to me in terms of, like, how's that going to work? How does it work to observe my emotions instead of react to them? I mean, isn't observing my emotions just going to make me, I was practicing with anger. Isn't that just going to make me more angry to observe my anger? But I was willing to give it a try. And so that one bit of wisdom carried me for months. And in retrospect, looking back on what I learned from doing just that one practice, I can now put it into the context of the Four Noble Truths, of intention, of purpose, of aversion. You know, I saw a lot of those pieces, but didn't have the language for it. That one instruction gave me a lot of depth of understanding. And then, as I began to learn about the teachings, it's like, oh, that's what I saw. That's what I understood. So it put it kind of into context. So in just that one little tiny bit piece of teaching began to connect me with a lot of the other teachings. I didn't come up with the Four Noble Truths in my own mind. You know, I didn't phrase that to myself. But I did recognize, wow, there's a freight train of anger here. You know, and without the anger being present. So in that moment, seeing there's the intention to anger. Anger's not arising. You know, so that was witnessed. I didn't have the language for it. But then as I began to read and began to understand the teachings, it's like, oh, I see. I've been learning all of these things through my experience already. And so I kind of think of almost the Buddhist teachings is, if you start with any one little piece, it's like a hologram. You know, that if you really practice with that piece, you'll touch into the Dharma, the whole of the Dharma. One teacher, Munindraji, Joseph Goldstein's, one of Joseph Goldstein's first teachers, said, sit and know that you're sitting, and the entire Dharma will be revealed to you. But just sit and know that you're sitting. So it can be very simple. And so, you know, we tend to be complex. You know, our minds here tend to be complex. We like to understand everything. And it's interesting. I mean, I find it interesting, too. So it's kind of a game in a way. Or, you know, it's like, oh, let me read about this and understand that. But in terms of the practice itself, coming back to the teachings you do gravitate or do connect with, oh, craving. That's what's happening right now. Okay, let me notice that. The practice will unfold. And it sounds like you're seeing that.
So
You could record a little bit here. A kind of a clarification around the cue or the anchor task. It has multiple purposes, kind of like the breath has multiple purposes in meditation. The cue, the anchor being, you know, something that I think one of the primary purposes of it is to help us recognize we've forgotten. It's a reference point. It helps us recognize we have a recognition when we wake up into awareness. Wow, I've gone through 10 doorways and didn't remember one of them. It gives us a sense of how much we are aware or not. And it also gives us a moment of mindfulness in that moment. So it's a feedback mechanism. It doesn't matter what the cue we're doing is particularly, that, but it seems to help to have some cue or some anchor as a reference point so that we know that we've forgotten. So from that standpoint, one of its primary purposes is to simply help us be mindful. Another purpose of it is, you know, what I've seen happen. I mean, the people who've done this retreat multiple times see you pick a different cue each retreat. You pick a different cue each retreat. You find that the cues start coming back, and they begin to serve, because you have begun to woke up for them, they begin to serve as mindfulness bells. So those of you who've done this retreat before, you're finding that putting on your shoes, you're mindful. You're turning on light switches, you're mindful. You're going through doorways, you're mindful. So they become cues. They help to wake us up so that it's not at that point, at some point with the cues, they actually serve to actually, bing, be mindful, bing, be mindful, more and more through the day. So it serves first as a way to help us remember, as a way to help us see we've forgotten, and then serves as actually a cue for us as to help us remember through the day. And then the other purpose for it is this exploration around intention, knowing that you're going to do something before you do it. So it's many layered, this this activity. It has a lot of depth to it.
But you don't have to wait till you cue.
Oh no! Oh, definitely not.
I forgot to walk through the doorway. Okay, I got to walk through another doorway.
Yes. And I mean, a lot of the way this works is that you notice that you've forgotten. You know, because you had this cue, you remember you've forgotten. That moment is a moment you wouldn't have had of mindfulness had you not had the cue.
Forgetting becomes the
remembering that you've forgotten becomes the mindfulness, and that's where it starts. That's where that practice starts. So yes, it does kind of unfold that way. Now we do need to stop. It's 9, but I do want to say one more thing around the group. So there's a couple pieces. There is a kind of a smaller subgroup in the larger group. So the monthly group meets once a month when I'm in town. I'm going to look at ways to keep it going when I'm not in town, that monthly group. And there's also I think it happens maybe in between the monthly groups. I haven't been keeping track of it, but there's a kind of a Kalyanamitta, a support group subset. Everybody in the larger group is welcome to join into that. That meets in somebody's house. It's got a structure to it. I won't describe the structure, but that creates the possibility of there being a more ongoing support. And then the other piece that I offer is a kind of a mini version of this retreat for people who've done this longer retreat. And that's partly it's just keeping going with this practice, it will begin to really infiltrate. So I do provide opportunities for, there are more opportunities for people once you've done this form to have more of the daily life practice teachings. I've tried doing the daily life practice teachings in a kind of a drop-in format, and it doesn't seem as, it doesn't work as well. It certainly doesn't work as well for me as a teacher. You know, I don't know where people are. I don't know how they're practicing. So having had this training of how to engage with daily life practice, I feel like we have a common ground to work with, and we go from there. So I would just encourage you to keep going. Just keep going. It's good to be a beginner. So this is our last evening in this form. I really appreciated your practice. Thank you so much for your practice this week. And I'm going to offer a sharing of merit. May the beneficial results of our practice together this week be offered to support the welfare, the happiness, the liberation of all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be safe. May all beings live with ease. May all beings be free from suffering. Thank you.